That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Macaroni Zone. The Macaroni Zone. The Macaroni Zone. The Macaroni Zone.
Hello, everybody. My name is Danny Palumbo. With me is James Austin Johnson.
Hi.
And you have stumbled into the Macaroni Zone, the podcast that feels like the chef sending out something a little extra, a little something special. You know when the chef sends out something a little special? You know what that signals to me? And this has happened before. I'm sitting at a restaurant. They either know I'm writing about the place or I know the chef.
Mm-hmm.
And
I order, You're very important, man.
And I order. I have friends in the biz, and I order food, and then they send something else out. That is saying, hey, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
You ordered wrong. That's happened a few times. And they were right.
You think that's the intent behind it?
Softly. Not as aggressive, but, you know, I went to... the restaurant I talk about a lot, Daidue in Austin, Texas, and I sat down with friends and I was like, we need to order everything on the menu. And they were like, I want a burger. And I was like, I get it. I can't force you into eating a charcuterie board of game meat. So we all ordered. And then Jesse, the chef, who wasn't there, called in and had them send out wild boar confit.
Yeah.
And it's made with non-prick and lots of chopped vegetables and thinly sliced carrots and this beautiful, aromatic, funky game dish that was so good. And I feel like that was his way of saying, of like, you didn't order that? Like, you have to order that if you're here to get a sense of, like,
You're a food writer, Danny.
Yeah.
And I've always said this, Danny. You're a food writer and not a comedian. You're not a very good comedian. And you're an excellent food writer.
This is true.
You are such a talented food writer, Danny.
Thanks, man.
Comedian. So as a food writer, I guess you are developing these relationships where you are talking to chef. You're talking to chef.
I don't say the chef. I say chef.
You say chef. And because when I've been with you, they say this is a gift from the kitchen. This is coming from the kitchen.
That happened now. When that happened recently.
Well, this happens with my wife too, because she worked in hospitality at some like swanky restaurants in Nashville and Los Angeles.
Yeah,
and she would get gifts from the kitchen because she had friends in the kitchen, not necessarily the executive, but the guys in there, the cooks,
the boys. Hey, this is courtesy of the boys.
Oh man, I love getting something from the kitchen. I had a whole meal. That was after hours. We went to Becca's old job. I don't think the place is there anymore, but Michelle Branch and Reese Witherspoon loved it. La Salle. It was a French French coastal French kind of thing. It was like seafood. France. La Salle. The salt. And, right? Is that the salt?
Salle?
Fleur de Salle? And they brought us like so many dishes and none of them were on the menu. It was all like...
Why did they do that again?
This was, Becca used to work there. Becca was the front of house girl there
for so long.
And there's, she knew every single person who worked at La Salle.
There's no better feeling than, I mean, it makes you look important.
The kitchen
like
sending you
when
shit.
We were at Daidue, my friends were like, they couldn't believe it. And the chef was, you know, Jesse had said something like, he's a big fan of your fake restaurant website. Something I did in like 2015.
Oh,
and,
fun!
And he was, and I was, oh, that's such a nice. And then they say it in front of your friends, and all your friends have no choice but to be like, "Wow, he's like cool."
Yeah,
they have to.
Sometimes your friends don't respect you. Sometimes your friend, like me earlier on this podcast,
buddy.
Sometimes it's your friends who least respect you.
I think that there is. I mean, I'm a big, and I have no shame in saying this. I'm a big believer in doing things because they seem fucking cool. I mean, I feel like that's what cooking is. That's why I used to smoke cigarettes.
You heard Dave Chappelle's anecdote about Kanye West, and you were like,
"No, what did he say?"
Kanye was wanting to be in the editing bay. This is like before super famous Kanye. Wanted to be in the editing bay at Chappelle's show, and Chappelle was showing him some new sketches that weren't on TV yet. Kanye gets a call. He's like, "I'm at Chappelle's show," and then there's like a pause, and he's like, "I'm watching them edit. I'm watching shit nobody's seen before," and then it's like really long pause, and then he said, "Because my life is dope and I do dope shit."
Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. Cigarettes is an effort to. You're right. Cigarettes is an effort to tell people that you're cool.
We all want
it for everyone else.
We all want to feel like we're privy to something that other people aren't.
Yeah.
And that's what the chef bringing over extra food is. I mean, there's no getting around it. It's a wonderful feeling.
It's a wonderful feeling.
Anything that makes you
smoking cigarettes is not a good feeling.
No. But this is what,
next time if I'm ever smoking a cigarette ever again, which God forbid, if I'm ever smoking a cigarette again, and someone's like, cigarettes, which is a thing we say when we're all smoking in a circle, I'll go, "I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for you. I'm doing this for your perception of me, pal.
This is killing me.
This is
me.
For you."
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
Funny, I quit smoking a few times.
Yeah.
But the first time, I quickly realized it was fun to like quit immediately. And even though you're struggling with it, just start talking a ton of shit and like showing up to a group of people smoking and being like,
Oh,
are you guys still doing that? And they're like, "You quit smoking for 24 hours, motherfucker."
I know. Yeah.
But I would do that.
Yeah.
And it was very fun. And I remember after like a month, I'm talking to one of my friends in Austin.
Yeah.
He's smoking Camel Crushes. And I go, "Man, can I have a cigarette?" And he's like, "God," he's like, I don't want to be your first one back. And I kept bugging him. I was like, "Dude, it's fine." And he goes, "Ugh, all right, fine." And he gives me a cigarette. As soon as he gives it to me, I rip it in half. And he goes, "Why would you do that?" And I was like, "Why would you give me a cigarette?"
Yeah.
I love testing
people
and then flipping
really
it on them, which is like, you failed the test.
That's
You're
really
not
funny.
Supposed to do that.
Well, it is an incredible feeling getting rid of that. It's like you conquered hunger or thirst or something. It's like a thing your body's not supposed to do. You added a new activity for your body to need. It is the dumbest. It's one of the dumbest things. It is the worst trade-off. It's the shittiest high for the greatest consequences.
You get to look cool in your 20s.
Yeah.
I don't regret it. I'm glad I'm out. But I have nothing but fond memories of like pretty much eating nothing. I didn't really appreciate food much, even though I was working in kitchens in my 20s.
Probably because you had destroyed your palate by smoking cigarettes all the time, where you couldn't smell or taste anything.
Yes. I was only drinking and smoking cigarettes, and I still maintain that I looked pretty fucking cool.
It does look cool. It does look cool to smoke cigarettes all night because you're still in your 20s and beer is still yucky. Right. You're like, you're still trying to enjoy the things that do have flavor, that do have nutrition, that are fun to put in your body, make you feel good the way that alcohol does, and quite dangerously as well, but it's better and but when you're younger, you can't appreciate wine, you can't appreciate good liquor, like you just can't appreciate any of those things.
I mean,
the cigarettes help in deadening all the sensations of
if
things
you're
so you can get
19
through
years
it.
Old and you have an appreciation for wine, you're a dick. All these kids on like MasterChef Junior, like they know what truffles are. That's not a likable quality in a child.
No, it's not.
And kids aren't supposed to know about truffles yet.
They aren't. They
aren't. But yet Marco Pierre White is showing them how to shave truffles on MasterChef Junior. And I think it's creating a bunch of monsters. Hey, let me ask you a question. So food is
a bunch of monsters.
A bunch of
there's
monsters.
There's a significant portion of the population who has been on MasterChef Junior. You've talked to one at least once today.
That's true.
Yeah.
Showing up to lunch. Like, Marco Pierre White showed me how to make risotto.
Welcome to the new normal. I'm a Fox News correspondent talking about kids who learn from Marco Pierre White how to shave trussles are invading your kids' classrooms.
Yeah.
Teaching them to cut on the bias.
It's a valuable skill.
It is. It makes an attractive slice.
Do you do you ever cut on the bias or
usually don't. I'm a home cook. I don't often cook for dinner. We have dreams of being dinner party people, but you only get in California. You really only get to be a dinner party person if
Denny.
You own land. Denny parties.
Want to have a little Denny party?
We're only gonna have Denny parties.
I miss
you. You need to own a patio. How are you gonna host 12 people in here in this fucking
I mean, or you have Steph Tolov's apartment in Little Armenia, which is very nice. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah.
Or you have a decent million old area. Men who are in love with you, who you swindle into giving you room.
Hey, why isn't eating a sandwich... So cigarettes look cool, right? Food is cool. Food is cool. Why doesn't it look cool? Why is there no food that's pretty fucking cool that guy's eating it right now? There isn't one, right?
There isn't a cool food, and it's embarrassing to look at food. It's why our big group meals are typically with family, like people who you are used to being embarrassed around.
Yeah, they know your shame.
They know your shame, and so you... know,
that's right. I guess it is deeply intimate in that way. That's why first dates are so, like...
Oh,
you know.
Well, that's not a first date anymore. Dinner is not a first date.
It is to me, pal. It used to be.
We're millennials, which means we're getting closer and closer.
I believe
to 40.
In holding the door open for a lady. Yeah, I understand.
But I'm just saying that it's like we're a little bit more mature than the people than the kids going on first dates these days. Yeah. They don't do dinner on first dates. That is too much, too soon. For the same reason that they don't answer phone calls, because that's like too intimate. Which seems insane. I was always a dinner first date person, and I had to force myself to be coffee, second date dinner.
Can't do coffee as a date because it's too early.
I hate it.
Drinks is nice. I want to see everybody in the dark. And not only that, I want to be seen in the dark. That's what I'm saying. I've gotten a nice, let's say a nice chick restaurant, something. You know, modern.
A chick restaurant?
Chic? What are you?
Chic?
Chic. Oh, what did I say?
Chic.
Chic.
Chick
restaurant? Well, chic makes it sound like it's spelled
with an S. A chick restaurant, what, like lemonade? I'm trying to think of, like, where do ladies like to go?
One of these...
chick restaurants?
One of these restaurants for broads. That's not what I said. But a nice, like, fashionable, chic restaurant that has, like... You know, dim lighting. Maybe the music playing is like, you know, like what some sort of Mediterranean, like not funk, but like electronica type of like beat music, like sort of like sassy, like Colombian, like beats or something.
Yeah,
like a lot of bistros play stuff like that. I can meet at restaurants like that. Have a drink at the bar, and then go get like small plates. That's great to me because it's like it's pretty much like a bar anyway.
Mm.
But with like small plates.
Oh man, every time I've been with my wife for 6 years or something like that at this point, and I, God, is it really? It hasn't been that long. 2016, yeah, getting close to 5 years, and so I haven't been out on a first date in a long time, but I remember, biting off too much too early. Like first date for many of the dates were dinner, sitting across from each other at a table.
Which is very intimidating.
It's intimidating. I'm very extroverted, so it doesn't faze me at all. Because I'm ready to jump right in and be like...
Well, I'm restaurant autistic, so that's where I feel at home. I'm like, this is a place where I know things.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I feel comfortable there.
Right.
Even though the setting, we can agree, is rather uncomfortable.
I suppose. I mean, aren't dining rooms supposed to be designed to be comfortable?
Sitting right across from somebody sometimes.
I think a high bar stool... infinitely less comfortable than a booth.
Sitting on a bar stool is more humanizing. Sitting on a bar stool is like, we're all pieces of shit, right? It's all on the table.
At the bar stool? See, I feel like the bar stool forces in, if we're speaking heteronormatively, which we're both straight white men. By the way, straight white men can't say anything anymore. Have you seen this in the news? I was just saying this the other day on my podcast where only I get to talk. I feel like often when you're out with a lady, Danny, and you're at the bar stool, she is paying a lot of attention to posture and how to situate herself on the tippy top of that bar stool. The back straight, the not leaning too much, not hunching too much, the pretension and the artifice of dating. I feel like it's a load off of the lady to get her in a lower to the ground chair.
Aren't you worried? I mean, I've been worried about this as a man too. When I sit in a bar stool and like, if I'm with my friends and we're sitting at a bar stool, I'm hunched over practically napping like it's study hall, drinking a beer. Like my posture is horrible.
Yeah.
But if a woman is sitting with me, I mean, I perk the fuck up.
Well, naturally
I sit like I've never have sat before in a bar stool.
Naturally
just to
you
appear
do.
Like I'm not like a slob.
Yeah.
But also, artifice, sure, but like, you know, that's probably how you're supposed to fucking sit in the first place.
And then one day you'll get married to a woman, Danny, and all of that will go away, and you'll be napping in public like a Japanese businessman very soon. You'll be asleep like a Sarariman on the subway.
I hope so, pal.
Yeah, you won't care where you are. You'll just like conk out. I love going to bars with my wife. She specifically loves beer, which is cool. That's like what you want, right? That's what rom-coms tell you you want, is the lady who enjoys beer.
Uh-huh.
And she's pregnant now, and we go out. I'm still drinking sometimes, and she just the daggers, staring daggers at me when
You're drinking?
Because I'm drinking, and she can smell it, and she's pissed that she's not part of the experience.
Ooh.
She's pissed. She wants to be a mother, wants to have a baby, excited about everything, but So I've given up beer. That is her favorite drink. I've given up beer. I don't drink beer. Rarely do I drink beer now.
I didn't think about that.
I'm a once a month beer now.
I didn't think about that. That does have to be.
So I have to drink.
That does have to be rough. You're wearing a lot of like flowery shirts. You have nice sunglasses.
Oh, me?
Yo, yeah, yes, you. Yeah, your fashion. Just it's summer. You're dressed like a jolly boy. A giggling, you know, funny white guy, and you're drinking and you have nice sunglasses, and she's like, you know, God, I want to be that jolly boy right now.
I'm dressing festively.
Festively.
I'm wearing my Stella McCartney sunglasses that she got me for my birthday last Monday.
They're very nice.
And I'm enjoying myself. I've grown a mustache, you know,
Coke dealer's accountant. I have said this.
Yeah, you
before.
Said that I looked like a Miami Beach a facilitator of fentanyl.
100%. You crunched the numbers, pal.
I crunched the numbers, and I keep two sets of books.
You're the first domino to fall. They get you first. You rat.
Except,
you get murdered.
I mean, should they be worried or gladdened by my close relationship with the chief of police? Should my boss keep more private security detail on me because I'm keeping the chief of police so close to the vest?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I worry
about.
Well,
I mean, I would ask...
When I hit the links, that's what I worry
about. I would ask a simple question. Can we fucking trust you, James?
You can trust me the same way that you can trust Horace,
the
helicopter pilot.
Yeah, the least trustworthy name...
Horace.
Horace.
Horace is like a 5-star helicopter pilot. And by the way, it doesn't get more soundproof than a helicopter. I mean, nobody can hear us up in here.
Can I tell you, I had a job interview one time at this restaurant called Lombardozzi's. And
Lombardozzi's.
Lombardozzi's in Pittsburgh. So you can say it Lombardozzi's if you want to. Tony Lombardozzi, the owner of this restaurant, one of the most Italian men I've ever met in my life. When I applied for a job there, he sat me down. And I'll never forget, it wasn't even a question. He just said, just don't, what did he say? He said, don't lie to me. Just don't lie to me.
Don't lie to me.
As if I give you this job, just be honest with me. And I was like, he had dealt with, first of all, hearing an Italian man named Tony Lombardozzi say this, even though he was a gentle soul,
right,
threw me for a loop. I mean, I was 23 years old at the time, and he had dealt with so many drug addicts and gamblers before that he had to throw this out there. And the funny thing was, I was already nervous for that job interview because I was lying from the get-go. I had a job already lined up like 2 months from now, opening that casino I was telling you about.
Oh yeah.
But I was like, shit, I'm hired for this good job, but I need to work for 2 months. And I was like, I'll just get a job, not tell the people that I have something else lined up and quit abruptly in 2 months. And then right in the job interview, he was like, just don't fucking lie to me. And I was like, yes, sir, Mr. Tony Lombardozzi, I would never. And ended up being some of the nicest people I've ever worked for, and I felt so bad.
And you quit on the spot and just quit?
I didn't quit on the spot. I gave my 2 weeks after like a month and a half.
Okay.
And they were very nice people.
Well, they were used to it.
This is also, have I never told you about Lombardozzi's before?
No, the guy, don't lie to me. When I picture him say, don't lie to me, you're in like a... you're in a back exposed brick room, and he's like carving pig ear. He's got a full hog head that he is taking slices out to prepare, like, you know, some special guanciale, you know.
The chef, I slowly realized why there was an opening at this restaurant. I couldn't have picked a worse place to lie to the people. The chef I was replacing Tony and Carmela, like the Sopranos, that's the owners of the restaurant.
Yeah.
There's a picture of them on the wall with Tony eating a big handful of spaghetti at their wedding. It's a beautiful photo. The chef I was replacing was their 35-year-old son who had died of a heart attack back in like 2009.
35.
He died so young. He had a kid. He was the chef at the restaurant, and so they had an opening, and I was the guy that filled it.
Oh God!
And they like, yeah, and they like were treating me. They were like, everybody was grieving at the restaurant. I was like, what the fuck's going on at this place? A lot of people speaking Italian. A lot of sad vibes.
Do you speak Italian?
No. The only Italian phrase I learned was at this restaurant. One of the old Italian ladies. Shit, what was her name? I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but I remember she would say, "Scopa la cugina de butto giù alla scala," and I was like, "What? What?" And then she would go, "Sweep the kitchen, or I'm gonna throw you down the stairs."
Say it one more time.
"Scopa la cugina de butto giù alla scala." I believe that's what she said, because I was like, "This is so funny. I need to write this down and memorize it because I know I'm gonna remember it forever." It was one of the funniest things someone ever said to me. Was yeah, and it was, and then the way she said it was like, "Sweep the kitchen. I'm gonna throw you down the stairs." And I was like,
"I think we have the title for this episode."
Absolutely.
That is such a wonderful story. You know, I'm really into like. This might surprise you, Danny, because I'm not like pretentious at all. I'm not like Mr. Hipster at all. But I'm really into like a classic Italian pop from like the 70s and 80s.
Oh yeah,
60s, 70s, and
like, 80s. Like, what are the brands? You mean like the Italian sodas?
No,
like
I'm talking about pop music, Danny. I'm talking.
Oh, got it. Sorry.
Domenica Modungo and Mina.
You don't call it pop. You're from Nashville.
Paolo Conti. Specifically, Paolo Conti is like the Randy Newman, Tom Waits kind of guy of Italy. And he still performs. He's like 90.
Is it fun? It's fun.
I think it's pop music. I think it's fun. Well, it's pop, but it's like Italian pop. So it's like very jazz derived.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll play you some. But a lot of the Italian that I have learned, I've learned from like songs.
Yeah.
Because I just hear repeating phrases in songs.
I want to learn Italian so bad. Bringing it all together.
Yeah.
Thinking of things that you do only to look cool. Cooking, smoking cigs, learning Italian. I have been made fun of because I have said I wanted to learn it. And people are just like, just learn Spanish, stupid. And I'm like, yeah, I should. I took like 4 years in high school, forgot. Started Rosetta Stone when I was in quarantine. I was like, I need to go back to it, because when I was in Portugal and Spain, I was like, this would have come in handy so much. Mm. Portuguese is weird, but it's still kind of closest to Spanish.
Is it a romance
Italian is
language?
Definitely. What does romance language mean? I don't even know.
Latin derived, Rome derived.
Oh, probably.
That's why Spanish and Italian sound identical.
Yes.
Because the.
Yeah. Oh, Portuguese.
Romance languages. And
is that what you're
Portuguese
asking?
Portuguese romantic?
I don't.
Origin.
It's weird though.
Okay.
It's got some Spanish in it, but then there's some words where you're like, "What the fuck?"
There's really weird. It's not just a dialect of Spanish.
No. It's its own language. Portuguese is definitely its own language.
Huh, I wonder if.
I believe so.
Is it more like French?
It feels like a combination of
both. Does it sound like Basque? I know in Basque they speak like a Spanish French.
I know I learned a phrase and I said it when I was like buying olive oil, and the guy was like, "That was pretty good."
Oh.
He was like very convinced. I was like, "I've been working on it all fucking day."
What was it?
I don't remember. I don't remember any of it now.
Wild.
James, I have, this is why
Portugal,
this is why I mispronounce words,
happened
James.
Happened in a haze for you.
This is why I mispronounce words so much. I have, I think, a full learning disability. But when somebody shows me how to do something, like cook, or like I retain that information. But if I'm reading it, dude, there's no sense in me even reading a book. I'll look at a book that I read 5 years ago, and I'm like, I have no clue what that's about.
Whoa.
The information just fucking leaves. I have to.
Wild.
This is why I reread things too, because I'm like, shit, it's like leaving my brain so fast.
I have an acquaintance, another writer, a video game writer named Tim Rogers, who remembers everything. He remembers every day of his life and remembers everything he's ever read.
The first
time he reads it. And he also speaks like 12 languages.
See, can we just, you know, can we just accept the people that know that many languages are just gifted? And it's, if I could, I would.
He describes it as more of a curse. He says it's kind of terrifying.
Oh, that's
it's
great.
Kind of terrifying because other people can't relate to it. And
cool.
Like,
you know what? This makes me feel so much better.
Your brain feels very full of like information. Yeah. And you can picture negative things that happen to you in stunning clarity rather than your brain covering them up with a callus. You know what I mean? Like a normal person's brain is able to take a negative memory and then like destroy it.
Yeah.
Those people who remember everything can remember all the bad stuff in vivid
detail.
That's
a good point. So maybe it's good that I'm like a goldfish.
It's good to be a goldfish. I would say it's good because then you can come back to like say a novel and enjoy it again because you don't remember what the hell happened to Scout.
There are
some
things I do
Atticus.
Remember really well and then just things that I don't and I don't really know why. But I say I have a learning disability occasionally because I know how easy cooking came to me and how hard other things don't. It's very specific. You know, I like that you said too. I was like, I might have a learning disability. You can go, yeah, you might.
Can I show you something? Speaking of books, I want to show you something, okay? Yeah. Danny, I want to show you this. We found this in the ground on our walk. We were walking. We walked past the little library. You know how they have those little libraries that are like bird feeders for liberals?
Yeah.
And found this, and it's a pretty important book.
Yeah. Real quick, can we just say that bird feeders aren't a strictly conservative endeavor? Or
oh no, I mean like, but you know the person. Listen, Danny.
Have bird feeders?
Who? No. I didn't mean that. I meant the liberals feed at the little library.
Oh, got it.
Like who? Picture in your mind, Danny. Picture in your mind who is seeing a little library on a neighborhood walk and freaks the fuck out. It's an old
Dale,
single,
and he's dressed in all camo. And he's got a giant spotlight on the back of his truck to spot deer. I don't think that it's true.
I think it's a wealthy, lonely woman who lives alone and eats a lot of Michelina's pastas with a Biden sticker on the back.
It's not, hey, honey, check it out. They got Master in the Art of French Cooking by Julia Child. Yeah, that's...
We found this on the ground in front of our little library.
That's such a good find.
This is a 1966 printing of Mastering the Art of French Cooking. And before you get to the recipes, Danny, if you look in the front... This is something that almost no, in my experience, no
what if it said, keep on trucking, and then a Julia Child signature?
With a little penis.
She signed it.
She drew a little crude sketch. At the beginning, Danny, I didn't know this about this book, and also I think it's odd that a lot of other cookbooks don't do this. She is, I assume, speaking to housewives in post-war America, and this was, you know, first printed and released in the 50s, I think, and she goes through and explains a lot of cooking terminology, like, which is something that I need. It's why I gravitated toward Alton Brown when I first started learning about food. She talks about what dicing is. She's like, when I say chop, this is what I mean by chop. And it's like she very slowly explains a lot of stuff. She gives you a kindergarten of cooking stuff.
See, I've got
before
no,
you ever get to the
I've
recipes.
Got no interest in doing that.
I need that.
I no, of course. I know.
I never worked in fucking lumbar dozies. I didn't have an old man terrifyingly sawing off the knuckle of a chicken's leg and saying, "Don't lie to me. I had a girlfriend who used to lie to me, and she didn't have a very good Christmas this year, if you know what I mean."
Can I tell
she
you?
Got a lot of coal, Danny.
Can I tell you why I don't concern myself with those things? It isn't because I don't think it's important. I just think that if you're somebody who has stumbled upon me personally, you're already, first of all, you're already reading cookbooks. You're reading food. You're probably some sort of foodie, or you've watched a ton of videos. I'm not like a beginner. Not that I'm like expertly, but I'm not like, it's not for the technique of cooking. It's for like, hey, let's talk about it. I'm assuming you know a lot, and that's where I like to be.
Okay.
For those people. The idea that I would have to explain something in a book to your average cook feels like such an uphill battle. I need you in the room so I can show you.
You're more of a Dark Knight guy, not so much Batman Begins.
Yeah, dude, I'm Bruce Wayne. My parents died, and I
but you don't need the origin of all this stuff. You just want to get straight to how much butter do I put in this thing?
Yeah.
In this salmon meniere.
Yeah, you know what a dice is, you know? Yeah. Also, I don't think those things actually matter. I'm very much a, like, you know, we'll call it rustic cooking, James.
Yeah.
I'm like, that looks right, you know? It makes my heart very warm, though, when people see a video or read something I wrote, and then they tag me in the thing they cooked, and it fucking worked.
Yeah.
That I can't believe. And
that's
it's
great.
It's a very good feeling.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole?
Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's great.
All right, everybody, it's time for Fake Food, Real Food, the part of the show where we review a fake processed food and then also review real food from a restaurant or some shit. James, you and I, we both stopped at Jeff's table recently.
And we didn't know that that was going to happen.
I ran into you at Jeff's table before we started recording this podcast.
I was on a very important business call with the president of television of Hollywood. And
it did sound like a business call.
It was a business call.
Steven
Spielberg was pissed.
We both had a sandwich. And I'm kind of regretting that I ate a sandwich because I brought something a little heavy that I wanted us to eat. Builder's protein bar.
Yuck.
We don't have to eat the whole thing.
Yeah, no, I'm going to taste it and move on.
James, sculpt your body with vanilla almond or chocolate. You can pick.
Oh.
So I have two.
By Clif.
You can have, is it by Clif?
By Clif.
Yeah. It's, can we just talk about, and this is something I truly believe, that it's never more evident how little society thinks of men than when you see the advertising for protein bars. Like, you know, truly, truly, this is a chocolate bar, and it's Builders.
Yeah.
It's you know, constructed to look like a steel. Like you're
sculpt
your body with chocolate.
It definitely looks like a Bethlehem Steel Life magazine insert or the cover of a Michael Chabon bestseller. You know, Michael Chabon, Yiddish Policeman's Union, Cavalier and Clay. That's what this reminds me of. This looks like Mick Sweeney's published this.
Yeah. The go ahead and take a bite, rip a little
chocolate
chunk off,
or what's the other one?
Vanilla almond.
No, thank you.
Again,
so chocolate.
Again, Builders.
And Clif Bar. Now Clif Bar.
20 grams of protein.
I think they also include caffeine in these things. Am I wrong?
I don't think so.
They do in the Clif Bar. One time I was having a panic attack, Danny, and
too many Clif Bars.
No, not quite. I was having a panic attack because too much cold brew. I rushed into a 7-Eleven to put some protein or some junk in my system to kind of slow down the adrenaline. I went for a Clif Bar and proceeded to get more panicky because the Clif Bar was loaded with unhealthy sugar and lots of caffeine.
Because I did not know that.
The Clif Bar is assuming that you're already on the trail and you've got a ways to go. You have to walk off a Clif Bar for about 3 or 4 miles. That's the only way that it becomes not a candy bar. Because otherwise, it is just a candy bar.
Yes,
it's a gross candy bar, unless you're walking.
Cliff, I can be okay
with.
This
is covered in chocolate, Danny. How is this a protein bar? Because it's literally looks like a fucking Twix right now.
I got
now.
Bad news too. I eat these things. I don't know why. I don't eat these. Listen, this is a lot of protein, James. It's a lot of protein.
Okay.
This will, if I had this at, noon, just one of these things, I would be tied over for a long time.
I'm on a diet, Danny. 34% of my daily sugar.
That's a lot of sugar.
17 grams added sugars.
Right. And that's all part of the
40% protein.
Listen, man, do you want to build your body or not?
I'm done building my body. At this point, I need to start shrinking my body. Put it that way.
You got to eat this stuff. What I like about it, though, is if you eat one of those things, James, you will literally not be hungry for a long time.
Well, that's good to have.
There's, you know how you eat some things? That was like air. No, this is like a lead.
Oh,
this is like eating like a small brick.
If I put this up against my cell phone, it wouldn't get any calls. It would send texts really late. It would be like, hey, I'm here, sent, you know,
right,
6 hours
right.
late.
They use these as like some sort of like scrambling hack, right? Fucking... CIA
now
uses these as scramble signals.
I'm enjoying it. Okay.
Yeah.
However.
You are, because it's candy.
However, it has the chocolate flavor that I don't like that is present in a lot of processed chocolate, milk chocolate.
Okay. Which is, what is that flavor like? What are you describing?
like if fudge was worse.
Yeah.
You know the saccharin butter focused thing that fudge is? That's
yes.
different from, I don't know, dark chocolate.
Uh-huh.
It's a fake version of that you get from like a government-issued Hostess cake, like from a public school dessert.
Yeah.
It's fake little, fake fudge. I don't like that
Little
flavor.
Debbie's specifically.
EL fudge? I hate the filling in an EL fudge.
Fudge is bad.
Fudge is bad. Fake fudge, worse.
Fresh fudge
is already pretty tough.
When I say fudge, I am mainly meaning the fake fudge. Yeah. America doesn't really do chocolate well at all.
Kind of at all.
We kind of, even Hershey is like, you know, Hershey Kisses now.
Even milk chocolate.
Have some good flavors now, but like most milk chocolate is fucking bad. Like if you want good chocolate, you got to get it from like Amsterdam or Germany or some shit. You know, all that stuff. Ritter Sport, which we eat.
Oh, I love Ritter Sport.
They're so fucking good.
It's so good, and I think it's because they don't go nuts with high fructose corn syrup. And I think we, as a nation, are...
It's ironic.
I'm wondering when...
We're so fat, and we're bad at chocolate. You think it would be good.
Well, you know the conspiracy about how they hid Coke? They came up with new Coke, and then they brought back Coca-Cola Classic.
Right.
And that was to change it from real sugar to high fructose corn syrup.
Because it was more addictive.
Well, it's cheaper, and they came out with a Coke everyone hated, and this was like a bet that they were like, oh, we'll take away old Coke, we'll change the recipe, give them a new Coke that they hate, then when we come out with Coca-Cola Classic, it'll be just as popular, and they will have, in the collective subconscious, will have forgotten what the old Coke tasted like when it had real sugar.
Because is that true?
That is a theory. That's why,
yeah.
Because remember, we grew up with Coca-Cola Classic. Yeah. When we were children, it said Classic on the bottle.
Yeah.
And that was because they had done New Coke. And a lot of people think it was so that they could swap out the sugar and so that no one would notice and taste the difference, because it would have been a very negative thing for people to be like, Coke tastes different. And then, like, you know, they'd all go to Pepsi or whatever, they assume.
Well, that's twisted.
Isn't that fucked up?
Ad companies are twisted. When I see things like this, it's like, you know, the snack I brought last week, Jolly Pong, pictures of vegetables. It's a cereal snack. It's all made of corn and shit. Mm-hmm. And it's like there's pictures of vegetables. You know, Builder, fucking get ripped. You know, like all the way we advertise, you know, non-GMO and like no MSG, like all these things. I'm like, man, it's nobody is being forthright. This is going to come back into a later topic, but it is 100% all of it to make money and to get us to buy the shit. And nobody, not one company, James.
Yeah.
I don't think not one mainstream company has the consumer's best interests at heart.
No.
Not one. We'll come back to it in a little bit because I want to review some real food from a restaurant.
I would also say that in general, one's own mother cooking the best meal you've ever had does not have your best interest in mind. Most of what we enjoy eating is not good for us.
Yeah, but your mom at least tries to make you eat some fucking real vegetables.
Oh, yeah. You'll try.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Also, maybe a good name for something. One's Own Mother. You go, wow, that's so bland, it might be good for you.
One's Own Mother? No, that's a gastropub in Culver City. One's Own Mother.
Jesus Christ,
One's Own Mother is
100%.
Like
100%. We all know the font. I don't know what the font, but we all know the font.
We know the font.
There's a lot of white space on the menu. It's called One's Own Mother. We're all going to go
there. Come on, it's a Japanese-American fusion restaurant with great cocktails.
It's a funky corner spot.
A disgusting burger that's amazing. You have to try it. It's a $28 burger for some
reason. Hey, speaking of funky corner spots, we went to Piccalilli on Sunday. We got brunch. This is self-described as a funky corner spot. We kept saying it because it's such a funny turn of phrase I haven't heard before.
We went down to a funky corner spot that's serving up Southeast fusion.
Yes.
In an American way. This is Piccalilli.
100%. That's the cadence.
When you see funky, I mean, that's a self-determined
funky is
moniker.
Funky is a food word I like.
Really? Funk was, there was funk.
Yes.
There was fish sauce. There was
100%
mushrooms.
Which I think is maybe its own flavor.
Funk.
Outside, it's like, you could say it's umami.
It's after umami.
But like shrimp paste, fish sauce, these things. That's funk to me.
That doesn't come into sour. That doesn't play into sour.
You think fish sauce is sour?
Funk is the interplay between sweet and sour.
Okay, so
to
if,
me,
because
I think of funk. When I think of funk, I think of fermented.
Cookbook,
I think of vinegar.
Yeah, 100%.
I think of sour.
There's a
sweet.
Cookbook. There's a cookbook called "I Am a Filipino" and this is how we cook. I talk about it a lot, but they outline the flavors of Filipino cooking, and one of them is funk. And funk. It made me think, like,
is there a Filipino word for what
flavor.
They translate?
I'm sure
funk?
There is. There is a Filipino word for
a Tagalog
the,
word?
The fish paste.
Yeah.
That they use. I don't know what it's called now.
Damn it.
But
this is not an educational podcast. It's more about just
well, it could
vibing.
Be if I remembered one thing that I read. This restaurant, we got brunch there. First of all, I think you had your first Bloody Mary. And
yeah, oddly.
We talked about Bloody Marys for a while.
Well, tomato juice kept me away from the Bloody Mary for so long. That was a holdover from I was a picky eater as a kid. And
yeah.
I would see people get tomato juice on planes, and I would be like, well, that's disgusting, and
yes.
No one should ever
It's a dad
that.
Drink a little bit.
It's a little bit of a dad drink, you know. It's Cliff Booth is drinking it in Once Upon a Time in
is
Hollywood
he?
Multiple times.
Cool.
Yeah, he's having a Musso and Frank
oh, he's,
Bloody
yeah,
Mary,
yeah,
and he
he's
has one on the plane back from Italy.
Eating a piece of celery, yeah.
And it's, well, to me, it's a 50s beverage. It's a mid-century beverage. It's like a credenza with a chevron pattern.
Continental cooking?
Is
something, I think it... probably belongs in the same group as like a martini,
yeah,
you know, and a Bloody Mary.
Do you happen to know anything about the origin of the Bloody Mary?
No, I don't.
Tomato juice feels oddly the things that we ascribe to American food. It feels like a thing that came from an immigrant population then that was then westernized and Americanized.
And when you say westernized specifically, we are talking about the addition of sugar.
Yes.
It's one of those things you drink and you go, wow, it's tomato juice. It must be good for you. And then you see how much sugar is in it.
Yeah.
You're like, how?
Yeah.
It tastes so bitter.
Yeah.
But their Bloody Mary was a little...
it was an interesting
It was interesting.
Bloody Mary.
They did have pickled pearl onions, which I enjoy. A little pulpy. I don't know what that was. It could have been just straight horseradish or ginger. But, you know, that's
I think it may
sort of
have
a pulp-like quality.
Oh, he told us wasabi. He told us that there was a wasabi kick in the drink. It was a... Japanese approach to a Bloody Mary. He mentioned that the liquor was a Japanese
interesting
liquor, and yeah,
so then they're kind of all over the place with Japan.
It was pretty pan-Asian.
Thai you know, and a lot of their influence,
Vietnamese,
but, we were talking about enjoying a Bloody Mary, and I was like, you know, when you have it, it is sort of like its own meal. It is vodka. It is cold vodka soup. And then I started to imagine myself eating, because like sometimes you get bread at a table.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you're having a Bloody Mary, you do want to avoid bread on the table. It's like a Bloody Mary and a grilled cheese is too close.
Yeah.
To tomato soup.
But that's what
you
I said. I was craving.
You don't
craving.
Want those things.
That's what I said I was craving as we were eating. I was like, I
yeah,
need
but you
like
don't
buttered
want
bread
that, though. You don't want that. I feel like that's like because you wouldn't dip your sandwich in it. That now you have a vodka laden. Grilled cheese. I think you're trying to separate it
kinda
from tomato
kinda cool.
soup as much as possible.
Right, okay.
So if you get bread with it, it wouldn't make much sense.
Did you get much Worcestershire? They put Worcestershire in Bloody Marys, correct?
Probably in the Bloody Mary mix, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Worcestershire and hot sauce.
I thought I tasted
and,
something.
You know, you
I mean, that's
like,
where you can sub out an Asian
you know what I like?
Drink,
they,
condiment.
It had a small little toothpick that had an olive and a pearl onion in it, and I'm like, man, just get the celery. If you got good garden...
Yeah.
Good garden celery, not from a fucking grocery store, just tastes so simple and pronounced. Mm. Just even fresh celery in a Bloody Mary would be, I would be like blown away. But I like pepperoncinis in there. I like acidity. I like a little bit of heat. Those are things I'm looking for. I want to consume a charcuterie board of pickled things.
Yeah.
In my Bloody Mary, we had you had a really good astute observation. They serve something called spicy crispy rice salad. It's fried rice, and then you said that, but it's a good way to describe that to get people to order, because if you're going to a restaurant, especially like a brunch place like this, you're not like, I am gonna have the fried rice. People, your friends, will be like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But if you get the spicy crispy rice salad, 100%.
Spicy crispy rice salad,
which is
a great way to trick a young woman into ordering fried rice. At brunch, which she would never do.
100%. 100%. But her hands are tied. She had to order the spicy crispy rice salad. This is how Bon Appetit describes a recipe.
Let's
spicy,
hear it.
Garlicky. No, they use these words.
Yeah.
Spicy, garlicky, crispy, you know, whatever. They say all these descriptors with just a Y at the end. So that's kind of trendy, but it was fucking good. And you pointed out, you're like, what is that, lardone? And I was like, no, man, that's fucking king oyster mushrooms.
It looks like pork belly lardone.
100%. And yeah. they taste, I mean, I feel delicious. Like king oyster mushrooms keep popping up on this podcast, but they're so fucking good. They're dirt cheap because they grow them in the dark in a factory in fucking Korea somewhere. Mm. You can get them sometimes for $1.
Food of the future. We're going to be eating a whole lot more fucking mushrooms.
Oh, dude, probably.
Mushrooms and fucking crickets. As society collapses.
So sustainable. It's incredibly sustainable.
We're going to eat a lot of mushrooms and crickets. Real quick about the crispy thing. You see this in fast food menus. This is why it came to mind.
Yeah.
Is at some point they decided they couldn't say fried anymore at McDonald's, at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Now it's KFC. They don't say, it's like AMC.
They
just kept the letters, but they say fried anymore.
Yeah.
And you can get
crispy
or grilled.
Yes.
And it's just one of those, it's like climate change. It's like when George W. Bush's administration saw global warming and they were like, how do we do anything? How do we seem like we're doing anything? Oh, well, we'll change global warming to climate change. Oh,
yes.
It's comparison that nobody needs, and I'm going off on too many digressions. but in The Office, Dwight wants to know how much money Andy is making. Is Andy a higher position than him? And then Dwight asks him, how much money is Andy making? And Michael says, it's it's not in terms of more or less. Your pay is just different. I love that. And that's like how I feel about the W. Bush moniker climate change. It's like, it's not that the world's getting hotter or colder. It's just different outside.
Yeah.
But the climate change. Don't worry about it getting hotter.
Yeah. It's not fried. It's just a crispy texture.
It's crispy. It's
how
crisp.
We got there
we
doesn't matter.
We gave it a
matter.
Crispy texture. Yeah, it doesn't have more oil
it's
than
smart.
The grill.
This is, I mean, and listen, I do like this place, but this does fit with the theme of like, people just lie to you to get you to buy stuff.
They do.
And that's where this falls for sure. But here's the thing. I want fried rice at fucking 11 in the morning, and it was very fucking good. It was very good.
It was so good.
Pork meatballs, good vinegar, probably nok cham and spice.
Nok cham and everything.
Nok cham and anything.
I would say that the main flavors that I was getting from everything that we tried, I would say it was more in the Vietnamese direction. There was lots of mint, and there was lots of funky nok cham.
Vietnamese and Thai. Nok cham, you get, you know, which, as far as I know, nok cham is made typically with like four things, which is fish sauce, water, sugar.
Some little carrot shreds.
Maybe. Well, that's the part that's freestyle.
Right.
You can put whatever you want. Yeah, chili, garlic, whatever. But I mean, it's fish sauce and sugar. It's sweet. So like when we had the crispy Thai omelet, which I got to say, omelet was not very crispy and definitely not root and pear. But the omelet was good, but it was drenched in nok cham.
It was more flavorful.
Drenched in nok cham.
It was more flavorful than good to me. I was more excited actually about the salad. Top of it than I was about the omelet. I kind of wish that it wasn't drenched. I would have liked to had one hard egg dish at some point.
Yeah. That chicken katsu, though, was good.
Oh, that was awesome.
I love it's so good. They do it for dinner, too, but just when you can...
Big-ass chicken katsu. It was gigantic.
The texture, it looks almost like frayed. In a way, it's like split
they probably
off
pound
so many
the
different...
fuck out of it. They probably take a pretty good sized chicken breast and then
the breading is like
just
demolish it and something else because it's just like it's so crispy. And you know when you can take a knife, almost like they do with the fried pork belly, you can just scrape it and hear the sound. You can do that to this katsu, and you just know it's fried perfectly.
You needed a steak knife for it. It was a very substantial piece of chicken.
Really delicious. This place has a lot of mint. A lot of fucking cilantro, a lot of nok cham hanging out and everything. We got a wok crepe, which was like a thicker style crepe with, you know, I think strawberries and, you know, homemade whipped cream. Impossible to fuck up.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. I liked it. And,
even color all over it. When I get like French crepes, they have that sort of like pulmonary system looking like toast on it or whatever, the browning. And this was not yellow. This was more almost pancake. Where it was that brown all over, and every bite had that big like toasted pancake-y flavor to it.
I really liked my crepes. I'm editing a video right now of making mushroom crepes, and I use it the same way I do manicotti too. It's like a crepe recipe, but I like it a little soft and yellow.
This one gave me more like a thin pigs in a blanket vibes. Which,
James,
which
when
you
go back,
get from a
let's say, I mean, it's Culver City. But
Culver City's a little hard for me to get to.
When do you want to go to a funky corner spot? Okay, so I think I'd have to be in the area, but I've been there for dinner before, and I can't remember what they did, but the one thing that I will crave again is a fucking that katsu. And I may make a special trip in a few months. Let's say late winter, or early winter, whenever it gets a little cooler again, I think I'm going to crave a nice fucking fried katsu. So like and it's like kind of a family style restaurant. Their portions are pretty big. And even though it's like kind of a trendier looking place, it reads as like a very sort of homey, you know,
yeah,
restaurant to me. So I'll probably go back in the winter sometime.
I'm going to go back
twice a year.
My big impression that I got from eating everything that I did, everything was really indulgent and decadent, but it also, every dish came with a green salad of some kind and like an herby salad.
Yes.
There was always something to break the junk.
Good point.
And I say junk glowingly. I enjoyed all the junk I had. But it was junk nonetheless, and that's what made me think, oh, I wish I had drank too much last night. It was one of the only times I've ever had the thought, I wish I got fucked up last night to be eating this.
Yeah.
It was the kind of brunch that was great on its own just because there were great flavors and respite from the funky flavors with salads. But it's going to be way more fun when I eat there after a night of heavy drinking.
It's a godsend in that way.
Because everything had a fried egg. Everything had a crispy. It was filling. It was a very filling
brunch.
Very
filling.
Sometimes I get too loaded with empty carbs at brunch, and I get full before I got satisfied.
Yes.
And this was very satisfying.
Very
so
satisfying.
I think it would like murder my hangover. And so I'm going to wait until Danny, I'm going to go back the next time I am hung the hell over.
Yeah, I'm going to wait till I'm a dad and I have a drinking problem again because everything's very stressful. And I'm going to go back to Piccalilli.
Piccalilli.
For all you drunk dads out there, go to Piccalilli.
Piccalilli.
James, special topic of the day. Real quick, we got some fucking Subway news, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Some stuff that I hadn't been too aware of. They started a new campaign. Did you know about this? It's called the Eat Fresh Refresh. I love it.
Can you say that in a Jay Leno voice?
It's called the
campaign. What about those?
I can give you my Jay Leno joke. This is a joke I would do on stage, but I would do a bit about Subway.
Okay.
And then I would say the slogan should be Subway Eat. Just stop it right there.
I have a
just
Subway joke. I used to do a Subway joke. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay. Employees at Subway are called sandwich artists. I think that's why I say I like the chicken bacon ranch, but secretly don't get it. No one ever laughs at that.
Come on.
Come on.
That's not true. You haven't said that in a while.
I haven't said it in a while.
That's pretty good.
You mean that now that people like me, they'll laugh at that?
No, I mean, I don't
know. It doesn't stand on its own.
I don't know.
I used to do a bunch of Jim Gaffigan like food one-liners.
Yeah,
I've been drinking a lot of Perrier because I like Sprite, but I wish it tasted terrible.
I've got all my food stuff. I feel like I got out of my system on my last album. And now that my only album. And now that I'm like writing about food and stuff, I'm like, oh, I don't think that's going to bleed into my stand-up anymore. I think I'm done with it.
Hmm.
And the things I want to like now stand-up is a thing where like, okay, that's to get away from like food stuff now.
Okay.
Where they used to be melded, but I have a Subway joke. I have a joke about Golden Corral. I have a joke about Chopped. Master Chef.
Embrace your persona,
no,
Danny.
I am, but I'm saying it's more fun now to do jokes that have nothing to do with food. Because now I'm trying to prove I'm like, I'm funny about things that aren't food.
Sure, and then you have a place to put all of your
100%. I have a place to put it.
And that's the Macaroni Zone, bitch. The podcast that feels like listening to a Danny Palumbo album while you drink a Japanese Bloody Mary.
It's pretty good. It's good. It's a good tempo. That's what I sound like. Subway, new campaign, Eat Fresh, Refresh. If you haven't seen the commercial, Tom Brady, Steph Curry, Serena
Megan
Williams,
Rapinoe,
and George Bush, Clinton, both of them, both Clintons, and get this, in the commercial, Nancy Silverton is in this commercial for Subway.
Why?
And I think
Nancy, why? Well, you know what? Bernie Madoff ran off with like $16 million of Nancy Silverton's money. So maybe she's got some bills to pay.
Is that true?
She was one of the high-profile people whom Bernie Madoff stole money from in his Ponzi scheme.
So she's in this ad, and I don't know what she says, but she's part of this like panel to improve Subway's food. And I was reading this article on Los Angeles Magazine, and she says a couple of things. I just want to talk about them real quick. Silverton added that she was interested in the project because it was a large company putting sincere effort into improving their quality. Quote, "I think we need to support large companies who are doing the right thing." James, what do you think about that? My rebuttal to that is, or we could let them die naturally, like the dinosaurs. I don't think there's any need to be saving Subway.
Danny, I want you to think about something. Subway will not die.
I understand this. I've said this.
It won't die.
They won't die. They're cockroaches.
It is more, I think it has more locations than McDonald's.
They are more on the ropes than they ever have been, though.
You think so?
Yes.
Well, their product is fucking disgusting, and I'll go on the record and say officially, Subway, I need to say this in an Anthony Fauci voice, and I want to say this officially. I don't know how to do Anthony Fauci. You don't know what you're talking about.
That's good.
He said that to Rand Paul, and he's like, I want this on the record. Rand Paul, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Subway doesn't know what the hell they're doing. However, Danny, one night, Beck and I were flipping through Disney Plus, and we found a Jane Goodall documentary. Jane Goodall, you know her, right?
Yeah.
The white lady who hung out with all the gorillas.
Uh-huh.
And she's a compassionate teacher. She flies all the time to different organizations, and her main focus is not really primarily preserving primate populations anymore. She is a climate change and climate action, specifically, advocate. She goes and speaks to big groups, and like Greta Thunberg, like David Attenborough.
All right.
She preaches that we need to do something about saving the fucking Earth.
So what are you?
She does that every day. And she came under fire in the 80s, which is when we first began talking about environmentalism in earnest. It, more than just Ed Begley Jr., but like regular people started talking about environmentalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because she worked with Chevron. Chevron wanted to drill in a preserve in Africa, wanted to drill for oil. And she developed a relationship. She's a big whiskey drinker. She developed a relationship with the primary Chevron executive whose task it was to get business in Africa, start drilling. And she was like, hold on, you're going to fuck up this environment, like, majorly. You're going to displace all of these animals. And he was like, well, you know, she was famous. And he said, well, tell me about this. And she was like, okay. So she started a relationship.
Okay.
Friendly relationship with a Chevron executive.
Okay.
They would drink. They would hang out in Africa. She would tell him about what companies like Chevron are doing to the fucking earth. She said, if you're going to drill, which I know you're going to drill because you're an oil company and I'll never be able to stop oil drilling, I need you to commit millions and millions and millions of dollars to preserving this environment. If you're going to drill here, you need to do a bunch of extra shit to save what your company is about to rape the land. She was, and her philosophy was,
yeah, that's a good
shouldn't
point.
You need... All right. If you can't stop a monster, can't you at least? It's like why we have needle programs in like in the Netherlands and Quebec and all these places. They give you a safe place to do heroin because they know that you're fucked up on drugs and you're gonna do heroin. So why don't we have harm reduction? And Jane Goodall was an environmental harm reduction person, and she came under a lot of fire from the environmental people,
right? Okay.
For even talking to Chevron.
Okay, okay.
We Spa. Proud Boys went to We Spa to protest trans rights.
Mm-hmm.
Counter-protesters show up. The counter-protesters are who get shot by the cops.
Right.
If no counter-protesters showed up, I'm taking this into effect. The Proud Boys get bored because no one's coming to counter-protest.
If you're going to open a Subway in a local community, spend some money to also rebuild that community that you've destroyed with the Subway. Because Subways are environmentally horrible for the area.
Yeah, they are.
There's a lot of sludge. Everyone's dumping leftover barrels of ranch into the ground.
If you have already created an infection that has taken over America, and that is the distribution of terrible yoga mat sandwiches in every single community, multiple locations. Isn't it better for someone like Nancy Silverton to Jane Goodall that company a little bit and reduce the harm that it causes, even if it just got incrementally better to eat at Subway?
The skeptic
wouldn't that
in
improve
me,
the health of the general area?
The skeptic in me says it's good to get paid for it also, which I'm sure she's doing.
She needs that money, man. Bernie Madoff.
I understand.
She just died, man. She's not getting that money.
But I'm also like, we could just let Subway die. But if they are committed to actually, you know, because let's be honest, again, the reason Subway's doing this is probably because their sales are fucking down. Another article came out this week that said they tried to give away 1 million sandwiches and like the new refresh program, and it was a fucking disaster. Like,
sure.
Nobody took them up on it. Like, their image is so tarnished that, like,
by the pedophile who used to shill for them every day?
Buddy, that's like on fifth on the list of bad things Subway
no
has done.
No tuna DNA in the tuna. Yoga mat filling in the bread.
Give an entire generation
a pedophile.
Cancer. You know, things like this. So I guess
Subway's the worst.
I'm 100%.
But they're gonna exist. I do understand. What if we marginally improve something?
Part of me feels like they were actually, for the first time, maybe on the ropes. Really bad.
Actually understand it.
Like
they expanded too much too
fucking
fast.
Could fucking tank. No, I'm saying recently they've had so much bad press, and it's all compounded, that they might have actually, if not for this campaign, and we'll see if it even works, I'm like, man, they could be on their way out. They could like fucking fold as a company.
Fingers fucking crossed, man.
Here's what I'll say. If there was one of these big companies, McDonald's, Burger King, Subway, whatever, that actually did have an interest in serving a quality, cheap product, I mean, that still has, you know, we'd say like...
That wasn't intent on murdering you.
Why does fast food exist? Well, it's, you know, it's a way to eat cheaply for people who are fucking poor. Like, I understand that. Not everybody can go to the grocery store and fucking, you
know... Cooking's a waste of time.
It's a giant waste of time if you have... Especially if you have a family and kids, you know? It's like, what's more... You know, what's more of servitude than like, you know, being a mother or father and like cooking for your kids? Like that's the last thing you want to fucking do or have time for.
It's so time consuming, not only to prepare a meal for your kids, but to give them to build them each individually a Sonic the Hedgehog the movie 2 toy. I mean, that's probably the most time consuming part of feeding young children.
This is getting very,
and McDonald's
this
really
is getting very
fills
specific
that goal.
Now. This is what you're gonna do. I understand. So, I mean, like, there's a skeptic in me that's like, she's getting paid for it, da-da-da-da. But I think that also maybe you convinced me that, you know, maybe it can end up being a good thing. They asked Silverton, what's your favorite sandwich at Subway? And she said, I'm looking forward to the new Subway. It's not just one particular sandwich I'm looking forward to, but the whole new vision. So I don't know technically what it entails.
She's a business owner. That was a smart way to answer that question, because all their sandwiches
100%.
Are fucking dog shit.
She's been under fire before, I'm sure, for things. So, I don't know. I hope it's better. I don't think any of us are going to be eating there, people I know. But, you know, if they, companies don't do this until they get called out.
Yeah.
You know, McDonald's, Burger King, they didn't get rid of gestation crates for fucking pigs until they came under fire. Nobody does the right thing on their own because they're too busy raking in that fucking money. And so because people do that, I'm just like, fuck you then. Go away. You're done. Like, you didn't, even if they do something good, I'm like, you only did it because you weren't making any money. You're not a good person.
And I believe that that impulse doesn't actually die because capital is still what drives the world economy, and that then they just take it underground. They take the bad thing underground, then you don't get to see it anymore.
Yeah.
And like the Biden approach to immigration, where it's like, it's the same thing Trump was doing. It's just now we don't hear about it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
How about Subway has a new Eat Fresh, Refresh campaign. Boy, I've heard about polishing a turd, but this is something about literally polishing a turd. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
What's the late night E-Fresh refresh joke? Refresh what? A pile of shit? But not that.
I hit refresh on my Subway sandwich. It said 404 nutrition not found. There you go.
Oh, man. That was right at the top of your head, too. If you really wanted to, you could probably write for late night, but...
Oh, yeah, I could. I suck at packets, man. My wife would love it if I had a 9-to-5. and I didn't do stand up.
You wouldn't be happy.
I would not be happy.
You wouldn't
at all.
Be happy. All right, James, I think we're going to wrap it up. Anything you want to plug?
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a comedy game show podcast called What Things Are What Things that is now entering a brief hiatus as I take a break from trying hard and enjoy a month alone. But you can listen to the final couple episodes of What Things Are What Things at any point. And you can also follow me at ShrimpJadge, at Shrimp, J-A-J, that's Shrimp, James Austin Johnson, on Twitter and Instagram. And hey, if you like what you hear on this podcast and you want to give me a little tip on Venmo, that's at Comedy of J-A-J.
I like that. My name is Danny Palumbo. Follow me on Instagram at Palumbros, P-A-L-U-M-B-R-O-S. Not really. I got some gigs coming up in Los Angeles. I don't think I'll be doing anything like on the road until like maybe November or something. So, but and if you're listening to this, you know, feel free to reach out to me. Someone today reached out and said, you need to watch the movie Pig. Is it Pig?
Pig, the new Nick Cage.
Yeah, somebody was like, it's a great food movie. You're going
to love
it.
Somebody needs to give me back my pig.
That sounded more like Joe Biden than
that
Nick
was
Cage.
Biden. All right. Thank you so much for listening. This has been The Macaroni Zone, and goodbye.
The Macaroni Zone. The Macaroni Zone. The Macaroni Zone. The Macaroni Zone.